Listen, I got to give a clue here now. Okay. I don't want any more bullshit anytime during the day.
Okay.
From anyone. That includes me. It's going to be very hot. It's going to be very uncomfortable for everybody.
Very.
Want anybody yelling?
No.
We get anybody yelling around here anymore today, and then the shit is going to hit the fan.
No yelling, Aaron. No yelling. Here we go with the John Curley Show. Everybody, welcome. Oh, we already have somebody to play the know-it-all quiz.
We do.
Long-time listener.
Yes.
Big fan of Ursula's.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't like when I take shots at Ursula.
I'm going to write an
Ursula question.
That's
for
right.
Her. All right, good.
By the way, I feel so bad for Aaron.
Hold on a second. Dive it in, it is! I'll feel bad for Aaron! Because
without a doubt, it is the most beautiful day of the year so far.
Oh, but
and it's Friday.
Yes.
Oh, and I mean, Aaron was just ready to pack it up, get out of here, enjoy this beautiful day, and now he's got this dumb SWAT team response news that's probably going to go on for 8 more hours, and he can't leave.
He's a newsman. This is what he does. He has no real love other than news.
I am currently logging on to Apple TV to turn on the Mariners game.
Hold on there, Mary Joseph. What the heck is going on?
I know, it's not on route tonight.
Oh, not on route. Mariners taking all the Blue Jays.
That's right. And they're about to, I think first pitch is just getting underway right now.
Oh, golly, here we go. Mariners.
All right. What do you think ends first, the Mariners game? Or the SWAT team.
Hold on, he's listening on some other stations. I mean, he had the Mariners on.
That is Apple TV going through the lineup right now. What was that question, Joe? Sorry.
What ends first, the Mariners game?
I'm still here.
The Mariners game or the showdown, or what do they call it? A standoff.
Barricade situation.
Yeah.
That's a good question. And, you know, we probably shouldn't make light of what's going on in
You're
Everett
right,
because these are two... potentially shooting suspects out there, but
how about Tim Harris? Who's fishing for the Mariners tonight?
Yeah, let's talk about that instead.
Who's fishing for the Mariners? Who's on the mound? Who's throwing the high heat?
Yeah, Brian Wu on the
mound. Oh, the Wooster!
Yeah. Julio leading off.
Oh, yeah.
Gotta get Julio going.
Gotta get the bats going.
Yeah. Well, the other bats are going. Everybody with Julio's these days.
Tega's still available?
Let me look at the images here. The Rogers Center. It looks like it.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you, Aaron.
You're welcome.
All right. And you'll give us continued updates on the standoff there.
I will.
Can I ask one more question?
Sorry.
When they play a game in Toronto, do they do both national anthems like they do at hockey games?
I think so. Don't quote me on that.
Okay.
But I think so.
Isn't that the game that when they come and they play here, they basically take up the entire...
Yes. I went to a game last season. It's Blue Jays always outnumber
travel.
Seattle fans. But that could change this year, so they say.
Oh.
Why is that?
Well, because of the ongoing tiff between the U.S. and Canada. And
when will they become our 50th first state?
Right. I don't think that's happening anytime soon, John. But no, obviously, tourism is down from Canada. And we did a story, I think it was last week, because Danny Westneat wrote the story for The Times.
Mm-hmm.
Tourism packages from Canada are down like 30-40% for that series. And the Clipper usually runs a couple of boats from Canada into here for that series, but they're down to like, you know, one boat maybe for that weekend. So,
but you thought that, you know, the thing about the Blue Jays fan, they do love to come over into the United States and take over the stadiums as they do the Mariners. Often there's more Blue Jays fans there are, and they're louder and they cheer more and often have more to cheer about.
Yeah.
You would think that they wouldn't let something like this happen. They wouldn't stop them.
There'll still be some. I don't think, though, it's going to be the same. They call it the Northern Invasion.
Yes.
Maybe a bit of a minimal migration this year. That's what we'll call it. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. In other news, the jaywalking, which, by the way, I always thought it was legal. I lived in New York City. That's what I loved about living in New York. Nobody cares about, you know, when you're supposed to walk and not walk. People just always walk. But apparently it isn't. Did they ever pull anybody over for this? Jaywalking?
Well, jaywalking is officially a thing of the past, at least here in New York City. Today is the official rollback date for the offense, which was decriminalized months ago by the city council.
Let me tell you, hey, anybody's been in New York, nobody pays any attention to the walk and don't walk sign. People just go. And when Paula and I got married and we moved here to the Northwest, she hated that about Northwesterners. She, you know, at 2 a.m, there's no cars coming and people are standing there like just robot zombies waiting for the light to change. And she was bust right out there. And even later on, like, you know, 11 o'clock in the morning, she just go right into traffic, just right in there. Just, you know, that's what New Yorkers do.
Very dangerous.
Yeah, really?
It can be.
For who?
For the pedestrian.
Just look ahead.
Yeah, as long as you're paying attention, I guess.
You know, in Vietnam, I've been in the S. Went to Vietnam.
Oh yeah,
I was in the S. And the big boulevards, which were made by the same guys that did the boulevards in Paris, huge, and they don't have any crosswalks and stuff. And everybody's got a 50cc motorcycle. That's the only one they let you have, 50cc. So they all go about the same speed, very few cars. And I said to our interpreter, well, how do you cross this boulevard? How do you cross the road? Because no one's going to stop for anybody. He said, you just step out, move the same speed, do not look to the left, do not look and make eye contact with anybody. Just step out into the traffic when you have a little bit of an opening and just walk. And everyone will just go around you. But if you speed up, then you're going to get hit. So just look straight ahead and keep the same pace the whole way across. Because if you look to the left and make eye contact, then try to speed up, all those motorcycles will zip around you. But, you know, just the same speed, because they're going to judge their speed and their distance to you by how you are just walking right across the giant boulevards there in Vietnam.
663 pedestrians killed by motorists in Saigon in 2023, and that was a 10% decrease from a high in 2015.
Right. Those are mostly people that are not natives to the country. Those are a lot of people coming in there speeding up. Just step on out. Okay. 600 and some?
1,700 accidents, 663 deaths. That's motorists, motorcycles, cars hitting pedestrians.
We saw two motorcycles collide while going around one of the great big circles there in
roundabouts, right?
Yeah, big roundabouts they had in Saigon. And the two motorcyclists crash, and then they pick their bikes up, and then everybody stops, and then the oldest person sort of steps up. It's really interesting. The oldest guy stands there and listens to both sides. Well, you did this, and you cut me off, and you cut my back fender or whatever, and the bike's crashed. The oldest guy listens to both sides and then makes the determination as who is at fault.
Really?
Yeah, instantly. And they respect the elderly, and normally it's a man, and he says, you're the one that's at fault. If any money has to change hands, it normally doesn't. And then they resolve it. They pick their motorcycles up and off they go. We actually saw it happen. It was really interesting to see that. And then the other thing they do is everybody's always stealing everybody's motorcycle, little motorbikes. And then some kid will come to you and say, I know where your motorbike is. If you give me, you know, $5 or $3 or whatever it is, or $2, I'll tell you where your motorcycle is. And the person will say, okay, well, where is it? And then you go and the guy gives your motorcycle back. Well, it just turns out the same kid that told you where your motorcycle is, it's the same kid that stole your motorcycle. They got a nice little business. Get you coming and going.
Oh,
that's how it works right there. Okay, back to New York.
Okay.
Advocates of the change say the aim is to put a stop to another form of racial disparity in law enforcement. City records show more than 90% of jaywalking tickets were issued to Black and Latino people back in 2023.
Are they disproportionately more Black and Latino people jaywalking? Silence, because nobody knows that number. Could that be it?
Maybe.
Could that be it? Who knows? All right, so go ahead. You can jaywalk all you want now in New York City. Where's the other one? I thought there was another one that also got rid of it. Jaywalking was also going. Oh, just that. Just in New York, you could feel free to walk. But in Seattle, still continue to stand there. No cars coming. Everybody waiting for that light to change.
You're exaggerating.
I'm not exaggerating.
I live downtown. I do it all the time. I see people do it all the time. And
hold on. You've never seen the people stand there while there's no cars coming and they're waiting.
Not at like 11 p.m. like you're describing.
But you've seen no cars coming. We'll change the time. No car and waiting dutifully for the light to change. No cars, nowhere in sight, and they're waiting there like zombies. Like robot people, right? With their like masks robots. On and their pajamas on. Okay. Right?
Sometimes, yeah.
Okay. I'm learning to like try to be a better person and forgive the people that are wearing masks outside and pajamas outside. I haven't been able to, you know, reach that level of sort of Buddhism.
You'll feel better when you do.
It's the mask that people wear outside is like a bumper sticker for the face. Yeah. That's what it is. It's a way of you're protesting something.
Sure.
Right. But you seem dumb.
Well, they have. And recently there was some Antifa flyers that basically said, if you're not wearing a mask, you're not doing it right. So if you fall into that category.
Doing what? Hitting people over the head, smashing cars, stuff like that.
Whatever their mission is.
Okay. Yeah. Here's the mission. This guy is now, he is the director of the White House Office of Science and Technology, Michael Kratakis.
It's got to be a Greek name, right?
Yeah, it's a Greek name.
Yeah.
He's gone viral because he said that he, in a recent speech, somehow they're going to be able to manipulate time and space and leave distance annihilated. Wow. This is all. How?
So he's speaking to a bunch of corporate bigwigs and
tech people
and minerals and building and
here we're going to manipulate time and space.
Stagnation was a choice. We have weighed down our builders and innovators. The well-intentioned regulatory regime of the 1970s became an ever-tightening ratchet, first hampering America's ability to become a net energy exporter and then making it harder and harder to build. We seem to have lost focus and vision, to have lowered our sights and let systems and structures and bureaucracies muddle us along. But we are capable of so much more. Our technologies permit us to manipulate time and space. They leave distance annihilated, cause things to grow and improve productivity.
Wow. Ooh. Wow. How's all that going to happen?
What does he mean?
We talked about this before. NEPA, which is the National Environmental something or other set up under the Nixon administration. It was when it first started, it was about 7 pages, basically say, if you're going to build something, you can't, you know, hurt the environment and stuff. We used to be able to build stuff very, very quickly. The Empire State Building was built in 1 year. They say, whether I was apocryphal or not, that the steel coming in order to build the Empire State Building was still hot. That's how fast they were moving. They built the Pentagon in 18 months. They were able to build things very, very quickly. The Alaska Highway was built, I think, in 9 months. It was 100 miles long and had to cut through woods and all sorts of problems. They're fighting bears as well. But then once they get these slow environmentalists, there's about 3 groups that sue constantly. So by time the plan is designed and by time the building happens, it could be as much as like 18 years till finally they actually build something. He talks about reshaping how our government uses public funds.
In a moment of strategic significance, we must be more creative in our use of public research and development money and shape a funding environment that makes clear what our national priorities are. Whether in AI, quantum, biotech, or next-generation semiconductors, in partnership with the private sector and academia, it is the duty of government to enable scientists to create new theories and empower engineers to put them into practice.
Okay. And then something like the golden age of innovation. This is what we need. Like send Katy Perry up into outer space, stuff like that.
The golden age of American innovation is on our horizon, if we choose it. The task ahead of us is to adapt to new realities without destroying the American way of life or disinheriting the American worker. We seek, in the most basic terms, to secure our economy, restore our middle class, and uphold America as the planet's best home for innovators. I bear that responsibility as a president's science advisor. You bear it too, in exercising whatever powers and responsibilities you have. It is the choices of individuals that will make the new golden age possible. the choice of individuals to master the sclerosis of the state, and the choice of individuals to craft new technologies and give themselves to scientific discoveries that will bend space and time, make more with less, and drive us further into the endless frontier. Thank you.
It's a really fascinating speech he gave, the whole thing.
It is. I have to say something, though. Has he spoken to Donald Trump about this? Because Trump and his sort of isolationists, we're going to do it all on our own. We don't need to support NATO. We don't need to support our allies. We can be strong on our own. We can build stuff on our own. We can sort of be like Britain was prior to when Attlee got in there and said, oh, we're going to build our own stuff. We're going to bring back our economy and isolate ourselves from the world. Well, that didn't work out so well. And then Great Britain, of course, was the power, and then it was given over to the United States. We became the superpower. We're number one. China is right behind us. And now with this idea of these tariffs and this, you know, sort of breaking down of the structure that was in place, I don't think this is going to bode well for the U.S. In fact, we're all going to go to school in just a little bit because our professor's coming in from the University of Austin. Ben's going to come in.
Ooh.
And I asked him, I said, what do you want to talk about? And, oh, my God, talk about so depressing. And I didn't even bother asking him for something positive. He says, how about, this is what he's going to talk about. Most people have no idea how much damage has already been done to our economy and how bad things are going to be getting in the next couple of months and years.
Well, that sounds fun. That's good for Good Friday.
I'll get one interesting thing. China is two steps ahead of Donald Trump because when he was running, they saw what he said. We're going to do all these tariffs. So Xi Jinping, the president of China, went and said, okay, let's get ready for what we know is coming. So he supercharges the economy, creating more consumerism in China. Then he also meets with the tech industry. He makes amends with them, and he's got big plans.
Mm.
And here's the prediction I'll make, and I'll see what the professor says, that I think once these tariffs hit, inflation goes up, unemployment goes up as well. I think at that point, China then invades Taiwan. Our allies that would work with us will not work with us. China takes Taiwan. By taking Taiwan, they take the chip industry and then leaps and bounds ahead of the U.S. when it comes to AI. And then they become the dominant power in the world within 2 years.
Interesting.
And then something positive to come out of that. I don't know. Maggie Joe, well said, well read. I felt like I was there the whole time. Really, you're just sucking me in.
Hey, thanks.
You're welcome. All right. Maggie's Auto Service Centers, they've got 16 locations. They've been around for 55 years. You got to take your car somewhere. Why take it anywhere else? Take it over to Bucky's. Bucky's Auto Service Centers, where the men and women were wearing rubber gloves long before it's fashionable.
Someday I'll get that.
What do you mean?
The joke.
It's not a joke. It's true.
Really?
Not everything I say has to have a punchline.
I'm going to have to Googleize that.
Stalling, waiting for Andrew to let me know. No? No? There it is. Texas fight. Texas fight. Our professor. There you are from the University of Texas, Austin. You ready to go, Ben?
John, thanks for having me back and for welcoming me with the Texas fight song.
Is that you guys? Is that your Texas fight song?
That was our Texas fight song.
Okay, good. All right, good. All right, when I said, hey, you want to come on today? You got something good. Man, this is so depressing what you wrote. Basically just laying out, you said that people have no idea, like spoken like a true professor. Most people have no idea how much damage has already been done to our economy and how bad things are going to go in the next couple of months and years. Thanks a lot, Ben. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I just came here to brighten up your day.
Yes. Okay. So let's take the first part. Why don't people know how bad things are going to be?
That negative statement from me is very unusual. As you know,
yes.
I am an eternal optimist.
Yes, you are.
And I always tend to look at things as forward-looking. But what we're seeing right now with these tariffs is an immediate increase in our prices that we're going to be paying for things. Tariffs are a tax that shows up in prices, and we're going to see across the board price increases on everything that we buy. And 10% is what went into effect on April 5th, but it also gets worse because for certain things like steel, there's now a 25% tariff, which is going to directly impact production, like for Boeing in an aircraft.
Yes. And another example of it, I was reading a piece about a small brewery that imports aluminum for their cans. Well, now the cost of aluminum coming in from Canada is so high, they have to find a new supply source, so they're switching to bottles. But now they can't find enough bottles, right? Because everyone's trying to find, they're outsourcing in a new route. If aluminum is too expensive and it's not going to work for them when it comes to their margins, then bottles would be the way to go. But now there are no bottles. So these breweries are thinking, well, how can we possibly produce enough beer or beer at a reasonable cost that we could pass on to the consumer? So we'll begin to feel it in a whole bunch of different ways. And the reason people are not aware of this is because it hasn't hit their pocketbook yet?
It hasn't hit their pocketbook yet. And what we're seeing is unprecedented within the lifetime of most Americans. When I was 7 years old, I was actually had my picture in the Arizona Republic with standing in line to get gasoline with a gas can for my parents.
Yes.
And that's the last time we really had any kind of severe shortages of anything in this country. We're going to be looking at the shortage. You talked about bottles. We're going to be looking at shortages of all kinds of things as costs go up, as we get these retaliation from other countries that then put their own tariffs in place. And we will start to see shortages on things. It's not just rising prices, but we could be facing shortages on basic things we buy as well.
And then once the shortages are in place, then the cost will move up as well, because whenever there's a limited supply and demand still remains high, you can get hoarding. You'll get what people consider to be price gouging, although they don't believe in that. And the average American will feel this. I've seen anywhere between $1,700 or as much as $5,000 in their annual budgeting of just basically paying for goods that they need.
And that's direct economic impact. What we're also seeing is significant destabilization of the way we move our goods, export our goods around the world. We're suddenly going to see some of the things we produce, like Washington apples and cherries that are shipped out of the port of Seattle, are going to suddenly be stacking up there because China is going to essentially block those imports in retaliation for our 145% tariffs we're putting on their goods.
The president believes he holds the cards because of just the imbalance of trade. But we have seen before what the president of China can do to its people. We saw it during COVID. They can very extreme measures to suppress any pain that they may be feeling. He has complete dominance and control over his people. And I was reading earlier that he saw this coming. So he overstimulated the economy in order to get more consumerism going. He also, at the same time, met with tech industry to be able to sort of amend some of the fractious relationship between the tech people and the communist-controlled government there. And really, it is Xi Jinping has more cards and more power than the president has. Do you agree with that?
I don't know that it's more power. Overall, I would say both the U.S. and China have power in their own way. We have power because we have historically been a large market for them. They have power because they're producing a bunch of things that we need and that currently can't be sourced anyplace else. And as you mentioned, we saw this with COVID, whereas Americans, even regardless of what COVID restrictions were put in place, we could move around as we wanted to. That wasn't true in China.
Right.
The Chinese government made people just stay in their apartments. They couldn't go out at all. And that's the type of control that they have to be able to assert whatever discipline they would choose to do in response to what they view as our punitive tariffs at this 145% level.
So the American people vote with their pocketbook, as you know, Clinton's people were told it's the economy, stupid. I don't believe the president will be as popular as he believes he is once people start to feel the pinch in their pocketbook, and they will not stand by this. And even his most devoted fans will have to let him go. Do you agree?
Ted Cruz on April 4th said, quote, "Republicans face a midterms bloodbath if Trump tariffs continue."
Do you think that are they seeing this now? Does somebody have his ear that's telling him, stop this immediately? It will not be a sign of weakness. But if you don't do this, we're going to go into a recession, possibly a depression. We'll see inflation and unemployment skyrocket.
There is a story in the Washington Post. You and I, John, we know about the insides of this is what's reported in the press. There's a story in the Washington Post about how Peter Navarro, who is Trump's trade advisor, was in another meeting, and then other Trump financial advisors used that as a chance to go into the Oval Office when Navarro wasn't around and try to talk him out of these tariffs.
Yeah. I don't understand. I don't know what planet Navarro comes from. I do know that he created a false economist by using the reverse of his last name and then printed his research. Navarro was quoting his made-up economist. You know that whole story? This guy is Cuckoo Raja.
It was economists around the world, and particularly in the U.S., absolutely disagree violently with his assumptions. And this shows up in the way that they briefly tried to put in place these what they called reciprocal tariffs. The single highest tariff was put in place of 50% on the African nation of Lesotho, under the theory that they export $300 million to us, but they only buy $7 million of stuff from us. Therefore, 50% tariff on you, Lesotho.
I hope somebody gets his ear and we are able to stop this, because this particular fight will not end well for Americans. Ben, have yourself a fabulous weekend. And next time you come back on, have something positive to say, okay?
I'll make a point of it. Thanks,
okay,
John.
We're taking you out. Fight song. There he goes. We are auditing Ben's class. Thank you, Ben. Boom, 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 boom. Oh, I still owe you a bunch of quiz questions. I've only written two, Joe. I'm sorry about that. All right. What, you got your microphone? What are you doing in there?
I don't know. Oh, there you are.
There you are.
You owe me two more.
Okay, two more on that.
Yes.
You owe me a text.
Oh, I got hundreds of them. How about Tiffany in Puyallup? She says, "Hey, John, thanks for mentioning Jack. I really miss his show and have been wondering how he's doing. I'm so glad to hear he's doing well in sunny Hawaii. Oh, and by the way, I jotted down the quote by the priest. Pain and suffering not transformed is transmitted. That's a keeper. Happy Easter. Christos en esti." Nicole will know what that means.
Yes, she will.
Happy Easter in Greek.
Yeah, Nick wants to go to an Greek Orthodox church on Sunday.
There's a couple to choose from.
I know. You know that because your sister is
a nun in the Greek Orthodox Church. Yes.
Over in Eastern Washington.
She is. Yeah. Right near, in between Goldendale, which nobody's ever heard of. But it's.
Oh, wait a minute. Whoa. The folks in Goldendale would beg to differ.
That's right. We had the sheriff on one time.
Yes.
He was crazy. Near between Yakima and Oregon, basically.
Mm. On the thing that Father Brian said about pain.
Yes.
I had heard this as well, that all hurt stems from stems from unrecognized hurt. So envy, jealousy, resentment, anger, all of these things. That if someone has hurt you in some way and then not recognized it, then you carry that pain with you until eventually someone recognizes that you had hurt this individual. And they always say that a scar is not where you were cut. A scar is where you were healed. So it's a different sort of, flip the perspective on something like that. In the time remaining, I'll tell you the story. If I don't know if I've told it before, there's a psychiatrist that had the a mother and a son would come in every single, like once a month, and sit in his office and hardly speak at all. And they would sit there, and they did this for years and years and years, and he couldn't get any progress with healing these two people. And then he had came upon this idea that negative emotion stems from unrecognized hurt. And the next time they sat before him, he said, "Can you please tell me what your mom did?" This kid opens up with a story from like 25 years ago. And the mother says, "I have no idea that happened. I don't remember that happening." And that was the unrecognized hurt that stayed with this kid. And he kept the pain there. And he scratched at his own sort of pain to keep the pain present until it could be recognized. And then there was a great resolution between the two. So, boy, time flies when you're just trying to say something profound.